Vectis Radio on DAB.
Welcome to Maggie Talks To, a series of in-depth conversations with people who live and work here on the Isle of Wight.
I'm here today with Laura Peacey-Wilcox.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me, Maggie.
It's a pleasure. How are you?
I'm hot, yes. Like most people, but yes. Apart from that, I'm not doing too badly.
Good. So can I ask you, were you born here on the island?
Oh, yes, I was born here on the Isle of Wight at St Mary's Hospital.
Right.
8th of October 1964.
We don't need to know the date.
62 this year. Feel about 89.
Do you?
Yeah.
And you went to school on the island?
Yeah, so I was very, very lucky. I went to Love Lane Primary School. We lived on probably what was the largest council estate at the time. Love Lane was a fairly sort of new school. I say new school, but it was quite a newish school there that had a lot of, because of the estate built up after the war, it was a school that grew because there were so many people there. So, yeah, went to Love Lane Primary School, had fantastic teacher, Mrs. Vera Taylor, Mrs. Blythe.
You remember them already?
Oh, I remember them because Ms. Vera Taylor was like my mentor for my life. She was just such a wonderful lady. You had Mrs. Apps that ran the school and she ran it with a, you know, she was very awfully, very strict. We were constantly raising money for the swimming pool fund, which eventually I think did go in, but not until I'd well left the school.
Oh, that's a shame.
So she'd been raising money for that for years, Mrs. Apps. So very, it was all female teachers, and it was a really good school. I started the National Savings Bank up at Love Lane Primary School for all the children. And I was like postmistress. So it was when we'd just gone decimalised, and we so they came in with their 2 pence pieces in a matchbox to make 10p to buy a stamp.
Oh.
So, and I actually got given an award from the post office and a badge to say thank you for the efforts because
that's nice.
I'd done so much for the school and for those people. So
and that was
Love Lane Primary.
Primary school.
Mm, yeah.
Where did you go from there?
So then we went across the road, literally. I mean, it literally was, you know, 20 steps. And you were at Somerton Middle School.
Right.
Again, that was a new school because middle schools weren't a thing. And then they were brought in, I can't remember the year, 70-something. And so we went to Somerton Middle. It was quite a coveted school. It was one of those that, under Douglas Draper, the headmaster, he ran that school with a rod of iron, and he had the respect of everybody, the teachers and everybody alike, because of how he did it. So he was great. There was Marianne Sullivan again, and mentors. It was almost like I'd lost Vera Taylor, but I'd gained Marianne Sullivan. So
all right.
And Miss Mantor, she was a very good teacher. So yeah, very good work really with all of those teachers, but they did push you for results. There was a lot of pressure on you at Somerton for people to achieve.
Your favourite subject?
I think it was probably, I don't know whether it was sort of like history or English. It was sort of like I enjoyed all of the stuff about the Victorians and bringing in costumes. I always had a lot of old things that I used to be able to bring in because I always had all of that stuff. So I think it was, but I don't think it was called history. It was called something else at the school. But that was with Marianne Sullivan, and that was absolutely superb. So, and from there we used to then raise money. We were all sort of like, well, we're not all of us, but a number of us did money for RSPCA.
Yeah.
I know. Again, I won an award from Help the Aged because I'd done a sponsored silence, which people would laugh at now, but actually I was quite quiet at
school. And you managed it.
I did, I know, just writing things down, and raised such a lot of money because my sister used to work in a factory and she'd made everyone in the factory support me. So I raised the largest amount of money on the Isle of Wight for Help the Aged.
And how long did you have to keep quiet for?
I can't remember, Maggie. I don't know. I think probably only maybe 24 hours, but I don't remember. I just remember this big badge. I've still got it. From Help the Aged, that I was supposed to sew on to something.
Right. It can't be bad, can it?
Yeah.
And from there, you went to which school?
Oh, gosh. Then we went to Cowes High School, which was absolutely dire. There was no inspirational teachers. So they focused very much on the high achievers. And so all effort was put into the high achievers. I was in the big middle block in, at the bottom, you know, in the middle. And I just don't think there was any form of support or any form of commitment to help raise those people from the middle, you know, to want them to raise them up. They just really seemed to focus on those top sets.
And did you have a favourite subject there where you weren't
not really,
inspired?
No, I mean, art. I excelled in art. And to be honest, I did very well in my English exam. And they said, oh, you could have taken A-levels if we'd known. But that's, you know, the horse has already bolted by that stage.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
And did you have any idea then what you wanted to do when you left school?
Well, I'd already been involved in, like I say, lots of charity work and sort of doing things for other people and stuff and helping people. But I just thought I was quite a good organiser, that I'd make someone a great PA because I could organise them and stuff like that. But, I mean, I'd already done at the Isle of Wight College as part of my schoolwork. I did typing and commerce.
Yep.
Had an Irish nun there who used to beat your hands with a ruler if you ever looked at the keys. Don't look at the keys! Don't look at the keys! And she'd hit you across the thing. Sister Pierce, I think her name was. Anyway, so I did typing and commerce. So that's, I sort of enjoyed that office-y sort of work, I think, organising paper, pens, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but you didn't enjoy being whacked over the knuckles.
Not really. I don't think I ever did, but I think she, you know, she did to others. I'm quite a good touch typist. It did come in useful, it has to be said.
I'm sure it did, yes. And you started work where?
So that was when work experience was a bit of a thing. And I think I went to it was an estate agent, Crocker Estate Agents in Cowes, on the corner of Mill Hill Road. And it was, but they only wanted me there while they all took leave. And then that was it. Once all the leave, everyone had taken their leave, it was like, oh, she can go now.
Oh, that's nice.
So it wasn't, yeah. And they had me doing all sorts because, I mean, I was responsible for the banking. I used to have to come in if people brought in building society books and stuff. Horrible building, haunted in one of the rooms, freezing cold in one of the rooms. Blech. But, yeah, so I wasn't there terribly long because of that. So then I went on to work experience up at Plessy Radar.
Yeah.
And they shoved me in the accounts department, and I'm number dyslexic, I know now. I'd go on all right. Then they put me in the secure area, and then the Falklands hit, and everything sort of changed. So I did my time there, and then left there and went to the Isle of Wight Council, and I was like on the bank for libraries. So at the time there used to be loads of libraries. And so when they had people phone in sick and stuff like that, I was able to go in and take over. But in actual fact, because I didn't drive, it cost me more in buses to get to Bembridge than I ever earned. But anyway, so I got involved in the library, then applied for a job at Ryde Library, emigrated from Cowes to Ryde, because I'd met my husband at 17, although he wasn't my husband then, obviously, boyfriend. He joined the Royal Navy, and so Ryde was an easier connection for him to be able to commute.
Yep.
So then I worked at Ryde Library for a long time.
And did you enjoy that?
Oh, I did, yeah. They used to call me the Tasmanian Devil because I ran everywhere. I did enjoy it because I love reading. I dread to think how many thousands of books I've read over the time because I just love reading. It is my absolute one pleasure where I can forget everything.
Any particular genre?
No, not particularly. I don't really mind. It's strange. I read a lot of quite horrible books, but actually it was good to get an oversight of some quite horrific things that are going on in the world. I quite like the historical novels and all of that sort of stuff because it gives you just little bits of information. But to be honest, I'd read toilet paper if I had writing on it.
They do at Christmas.
Yes, they do. Not enough writing on it, but yeah. So, yeah, no, I Ryde Library. And from there I went to work at what was Osborne Electronics, which was then called Hosidon Bessons.
Okay.
And it was an electronics firm.
Okay.
And I loved it. oh my goodness, soldering and resistors and working out the number of the thing of the resistors by the colour coding on it. I really enjoyed it. I loved that.
So what was the end product?
End product was usually something to do with radio, telephones or something like that. And I never forget the big boss had come down. And in the end, I ended up on the inspection panel because I seemed to have an eye to pick out when something wasn't right.
Right.
And this big boss had come down from the mainland. And I mean, everyone was like, and it's like, and I said to him, well, you know what the problem is? I said, the flux on the machine isn't doing the thing right. It's creating all these holes. Everything's going to have to be thrown. And he was quite impressed that I was vocal enough to say it, and he said, right, I want you to do that on your own, just you. And so yeah, I did quite a lot of work, and then I fell pregnant and had my first daughter.
Ooh.
So
and how old's your daughter now?
Oh, what are we, 1990? She's 36.
Right.
It was so good I had her in 1990 because yeah. I can remember that day, and then I can work it out from that, you see. I'm not number very good with numbers, but that's an easy one to remember. Very beautiful, and as she grew up, she was a very, very funny child. She would entertain anyone.
Did you work whilst you had her?
No. Husband was very much about you'll be home and you'll be looking after the children, so I didn't go back to work after I'd had her, no.
What about the second one?
So then it was about 19, I can't remember now, but I should remember. Oh, it was 1991. So we weren't supposed to have ever had children because my husband had had cancer just after I'd met him. So the chances of us having children was absolutely, it was never going to happen. We would have to have masses of treatment. I said, you don't know how fertile a PC is and our reputation for fertility, and literally did fall pregnant very quickly. So we were in all the papers, miracle child born to, never going to happen. And it shouldn't have done, Maggie, to be honest. Anyway, and then automatically fell pregnant with the second. So I think Amber was only about my eldest, about, I don't know, 9 months old or something, and I was already pregnant with Saffron. So it was just, that was just a fluke, yeah.
And did you work after the second work?
We emigrated back into cows because I'd said to my husband, he was in the Royal Navy not when I met him, actually. He wasn't, he was boat building. And then he went into the Royal Navy, then he got the cancer and he stayed there. But it was dead man's shoes in the Royal Navy, and he wasn't getting the progression and the money that he wanted to earn. And so, I mean, literally, I think it was the entire mess, and it was like 37 of them all put in their resignation to leave. It was quite something at the time. And one of the blokes said, oh, well, I'm going to the prison service. And John thought, well, there's prisons on the Isle of Wight, that'll do. And so he applied. And so when I was actually, I just had Amber, my eldest daughter, and his prison service thing came up for him to go away. So he was away while she was only about a month old or something like that. And I said, go off and do it. I'm fine. Don't worry about me. There's enough support around me. And so we moved them back. We wanted to move to a family house. We had a house that had no drive and had permits, and it was just a nightmare in Ryde, very isolated because obviously my family are all cows people. So we just wanted to get back, sort of back over that way.
Yeah.
Went and saw a number of houses, saw this house, and we both knew immediately that it was like, oh yes, that's our house.
That's the one.
Even though there was a massive vermin beginning with an R in the conservatory that I had to walk past, and there was the hugest amount of cannabis plants growing in the conservatory. However, we looked past all of that, and that was the house we purchased and stayed for 26 years.
Can't be bad, can it? Hmm. We're going to take a break now there for some adverts. We'll be back in a minute.
Vectis Radio on DAB.
So we're back here with Laura, and she's moved back to cows.
I have, yeah.
And you stayed in that house for 20-odd years.
20-odd years, yeah. Brought the children up. I wanted stability for the children. I never wanted them to be... So with the prison service, I never wanted them to be moved around.
Right.
A lot of the children I'd gone to school with had all been moved around because of prison the prison staff. And I said to no, I said to my husband, no, if we're going, we're being, it's, I want stability and we're staying. So we were lucky that he got slow promotion, but he did get promotion until he became a governor. So yeah, we did quite well on that one.
Did you have any pets?
Oh, well, there we go. What did I... So, Amber, our eldest, had begged and begged for I don't know how long that she wanted this dog. Yes, my mum, I'm going to walk it. Yes, I'm going to feed it. Yes, I'm going to clean it. Anyway, we eventually went out to the lovely Pat Salt in Godshill and bought Versace, our little black and white blue roan cocker. Who was...
Why Versace?
Versace. So when Pat had a new litter, she always named them after like a whole thing of things.
Right.
So she had Prada, Gucci, Versace, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right, gotcha.
And we had Versace. And she said, oh, no, that's his Crufts, because he was Crufts registered. He had very good pedigree. That's his pedigree name. And we went, oh, no, we're going to call him Versace. And I think my husband had like a Versace jumper on, which just happened to be a bit odd for it, but he did. And so we had a Versace as our first dog, who actually thought he was a human being. He was like a little old man from the time we had him. He was absolutely adorable, that dog. Just a beautiful dog. And then I can't remember.
And did
remember.
Your daughter look after it and
no,
take it for walks?
No, of course she didn't walk it. No, of course she didn't. that was down to me. And then I was talking to one of my residents on the phone, so I must have been a counsellor by that stage, which was 1999. I became a counsellor, and she was talking to me, and she shouted, "Wah!" I went, "What on earth's the matter, Jen?" She went, "Oh, this puppy's just bit my foot." I said, "Oh, where'd you get a puppy from?" And she told me the Joneses in Shambler's Road. I went, "Oh my God, I'm going to go round." And they only had this bitch left, covered in fleas, this dog was. And I thought, God, my husband's going to kill me. Because, like, getting another dog and covered in fleas. So we had to put this dog in the back of the car, deflea it in the vets, Pets at Home or wherever it was. How we never suffocated it with flea stuff, I don't know, and took it back. And so that's when we got Prada,
right.
Who was a terrier, ginger and white terrier bitch of some description. But again, she was so pretty, that dog. But she was a terrier, which was not a good idea.
Because...
Because they're very yappy and jumpy and, you know, they're sort of... She was never very good around. With Versace, you could take him anywhere with anyone. You could leave him in a room with a child. He wouldn't even look. He was not interested. With Prada, I would know she wasn't... I wasn't safe to leave her.
Yeah.
But she was very pretty and very... Yeah. Yeah.
That was her redeeming feature, was it?
It was a redeeming feature. And then my daughter got Louis Vuitton, which was a liver and white... Mad Springer Spaniel, and then we had Hugo Boss, a little tiny one-eyed pug, because a cat ripped his eye out
He
was very tiny. So yeah, and now I've got Ralph Lauren, or AKA Wreck-It Ralph, who is a nightmare white Westie.
Oh, they're very demanding, aren't they?
God, he's hard work. Anyway, so yeah, so we've had our fill, and when these two go, I'm not having any more.
Okay,
I've decided I prefer my two granddaughters to doggies.
So you haven't had rabbits or guinea pigs or anything?
Yeah,
like
we
that?
Had a rabbit called Patch. Patch was eaten by a fox while my husband and I was away in where did we go? We were in New York actually for a long weekend. My sister looked after the two girls and the rabbit, and yes, got eaten one morning by the
dear.
Fox.
Oh,
so,
well.
Yeah.
So that was the end of
That was the end of Patch, never to be bought again. I think we did have a hamster once too, and that had a stroke. So, yeah, that had to be put to sleep as well.
Dear.
Yeah.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Cressy.
Oh.
God, how can I remember these things?
I don't know.
No, nor do I.
So you're in cows in
yes.
your house, your ideal house with
Fabulous
your children
house.
Growing up.
Yep.
Were you back to work?
Yep. So I did when the children were very, very little, as in, you know, 2 years or whatever, under two. I did what's the word, what's it called, outwork, I was an outworker.
Yes.
So Reader's Factory did made lampshades. So I took in outwork from Reader's Factory,
right.
Cellophaning all of the things. I used to get the kids to put the 50-watt and 60-watt stickers on it. So we did that. That was quite a lot of work. It was mostly evening work when the kids went to bed. Sometimes I'd be up till 1-2 in the morning doing that. And then once the kids started sort of school, I thought, well, what do I want to do? I knew I needed to be able to take them to school, pick them up and cook them tea and everything like that. So it was like, what can I fit in between? And my friend Jane had children very similar age to my two, and she decided she wanted to be a gardener, and she went off and done sort of gardening stuff. So I advertised myself just in, I think it was like one news agents, and said, quite happy to do cleaning, typing, whatever you need to do, organisation stuff, doing that. And in the end, I think I'd end up having about 15 clients that I used to go to at different times, different places. I was quite a coveted cleaner, it has to be said.
Good.
I must have OCD.
Did you enjoy doing all those things?
I loved cleaning. You know what? You'd go into a house that was absolutely, you didn't know where to start. But you did start, and when you went out, and you're like, whoa, what a difference. I never forget, there was one lady, and her cleaner had gone on holiday. She'd heard about me. She said, could you come in? And I walked into this thing, and I went, my goodness. I went, I'm telling you now, this is the list of cleaning equipment I need. I said, if you don't get me this, I'm not doing it. And because there was very specific cleaning products that I liked to use that I knew could do. And she was almost crying when I left, because she just didn't want me to go because the place had never been so immaculate.
It's amazing, isn't it?
So I did that.
After cleaning, what did you fancy doing after that?
Well, I think I was all right doing... Oh, no. So... I can't remember. So it was 1999. We'd been on holiday to Tenerife. We'd bought timeshare... caught by the timeshare touts in Tenerife, as you all did. And that was about 1992, something like that. The children were quite young. And so we used to go quite regularly to the timeshare. So what we did was we were out there, came home, and the front of the county press, the Isle of Wight Council is selling Northwood House. And I just looked and I went, over my dead body, is that going to happen? Absolutely not. There was no social media. There was no nothing like that. You just relied on the paper coming out.
Yeah.
So I got together with all of the others, Maggie, Sharon, Stan, Pat Bester, all of us, Janet Allen. We all had this big public meeting up in the church hall of St Mary's Church in Cowes. And I just said, well, it's not going to happen. Well, you know, I'll stand in front of the bulldozer. They are absolutely not getting rid of this building. And so from there, I just started to get involved in the battle to fight to keep Northwood House.
Right.
You know, the grounds were given for the pleasure of the people. And all I could think of was, if they sold off the building, how long would it be before they didn't want the people in the park annoying them and stuff like that? So I just thought, that's not going to happen. So anyway, from there, we all did the committee, you know, came and went. And then... My niece had got pregnant in 2000, I think it was, and she said it'd be a really good idea if we could hire dresses on the Isle of Wight. She said, because it's what they do on the mainland. She lived in Oxford. And so she said it'd be really good if we could do it. And
dresses
as in evening wear, cruise wear, prom wear.
Yeah.
So we sort of looked into it, and I said, well, look, if we did out... I've got this big 1929, it was, big veranda around my house. We could use that to see how it would go and whether it was a goer. So it was around 2001, 2002. I'd got a little bit of money from my dad when he died. And so I put that money into Posh Frocks, into buying stock.
Oh, right.
For Posh Frocks. And so Posh Frocks was born. So... By then, I was a town councillor on the town council, and so I was quite busy with everything. But with Posh Frocks working from home, I could do an appointment system,
yes,
so that I could still carry on. And I was still doing all my cleaning work as well as the house, the home, the dogs, the, everything. And so I started doing Posh Frocks. It really took off quite quickly and everything. And then in between that as well, so I was running that and doing that, I was called up by Andrew Turner, the MP at the time. It was 10:30 on a Sunday evening. And my husband went, who the hell's calling at 10:30 on a Sunday night? I said, I don't know. Picked up the phone, it was Andrew Turner. I hear you're doing great things in cars. I said, oh, I don't know, am I? And it was all to do with, obviously, I was a bit noisy about Norfolk House, but I'd also done, I'd started the Cows Youth Council up on Cowstown Council. And so I was doing a lot of, I'd achieved this town improvement area, which was a bit of a fight with everybody. But I knew I had the funding and the money, and I thought, I will fight for this. It's like I'm a fighter. You know, I'm not going to let them get away with this. I know there's money there. So anyway, so started up Posh Frocks, very busy.
The premise of that is...
Andrew Turner. So he said, can you stand for the Conservatives? We want you to become an Isle of Wight councillor. And I said, oh, I don't know if I'm a Conservative. And he said, well, have a think about it. So for about 6 weeks, I kept saying to people, am I a Conservative? I don't know if I am. Am I? And I didn't have a clue, because I didn't have a clue even who the Prime Minister was, I don't think. I just had no interest. It was all about the cows and what was going on in cows. So anyway, after so many weeks, I went, oh, well, all right, then I'll do it. And then won the by-election, so then I was an Isle of Wight councillor as well. So, yeah.
So if I came to Posh Frocks, would I buy a dress or would I hire it?
You could buy, but mostly it was hire. So I bought in, you know, £200, £300, £400 dresses, really superb quality dresses, that people hired for £40. But it was amazing the number of people that were coming through. It was just, because proms had just taken off.
Right.
There was nowhere anyone could go on the island that sold or did the prom dresses. But it wasn't that, Maggie. It was my eye for detail. So when the girls came in, I knew what colour dress would suit them. I knew what style. When a woman came in, and you'll laugh about this, what's his name? Oh, gosh, I can't think of his name, but it'll come to me in a minute, the government minister. He was over on the island, and he was asking me what I did before. Michael Gove.
Oh, right.
And he asked me what I did before I went into politics. And I said, well, I used to run this Posh Frocks. I said, and people used to come in to me and say, well, do you think I look good in this? And I said, well, from where I'm sitting, your ass looks like this. And he actually choked on his meal. I thought I was actually going to kill him. Heinrich movement. But he thought that was absolutely hysterical. But I was honest with women. If I would tell them, I would show them the difference. I can make you look two dresses smaller if you put this dress on rather than that one you want. And so that's what I did. I was just, people knew that I was completely blunt with them. You know, if their boobs were down round their waist, I'd hoist their bra up. Hoist the boobs, come on, girls, lift them up. And I would lift them and so that they had a great figure. And I was just known for doing that. It was just this eye that I had. I knew my dresses, I knew the stock. And, you know, even now I can look at a woman and know what dress I put her in and stuff like that. Yeah, very strange.
So you don't do that anymore?
No. So basically, obviously, I was an Isle of Wight councillor. I was town councillor. I was mayor, probably. I can't remember when that was. First, 2005 and 7, so that was right at the height of everything. Newly elected Isle of Wight councillor. I think I was involved in Rotary at that time because as mayor, you're an honorary position. They were put in a bit of a position because they'd never had a female in Rotary. And so it was like, oh, gosh, Laura's mayor, now what are we going to do? So Anna and I joined, Anna Crockett and Morgan Crockett. So we were the first two ladies to join because I didn't want to leave. Once I'd been around Rotary, I thought, gosh, this is lovely. These people are amazing.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to join and be with them. So that's what I did. I went in and I was just doing too much, Maggie. I think it was just, too crazy with everything going on. And so I thought it got to 2010 and I just thought, this is all too much now. I'm just trying to do way too much. It's not good for me. And I could see that people were then, by that stage, I'd had 8 really good years at Posh Frocks, and I could see that people were buying these cheap dresses for 40 quid off the internet, because that had all just started. And I just thought, you know what, how much longer? And I, you know, how much longer? So I got rid of the business and got rid of the house.
Fair enough.
Got rid of the two daughters.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah.
What, did you sell them? It's slavery.
We gave them enough money to buy deposits on property so that they could move out.
Fair enough. We'll take another break there now for some more adverts and then we'll be back.
Vectis Radio on DAB.
So we're back now with Laura PC Wilcox. And you said things were getting too much for you, but you've taken on other things as well.
Well, it was, I don't know, can I not say no? I think I need no tattooed on my forehead. probably now I can say no, whereas before I didn't. I was quite happy. I enjoyed helping and getting things along. So basically, we'd heard that the beautiful, beautiful cemetery chapels opposite me were going to be taken down and put into rose gardens because they were in a dangerous thing. So this guy had knocked my door, John Matthews, and he said, I'm new to the Isle of Wight. I've got all of my family are over at the cemetery, buried over the cemetery. He said, now I hear you're the mover and shaker. You're the one to get things done in Cowes. And I said, well, what's the problem? And he said, well, they're going to knock down these two buildings. But I went, no, they're not. I said, I know that there's money available. I don't know how I knew this money was available. It was something to do with Tony Flowers at the Isle of Wight Council anyway. And I said, no, absolutely not. I said, there's about 47,000. We will fight it. And so that's what I did. I fought for the money with the backup of the boys. And we had the chapels restored so that they were stable and that they weren't falling down on anyone. And then the boys and the rest of the team, eventually we all did a lottery bid. Met with two fabulous ladies, can't remember their names, so sorry girls, but they were absolutely amazing, did the lottery bid and we won that and were able to do the inside of the buildings.
All right.
And a lot of the outside of the work and, oh, the volunteers. I mean, I used to run across the main Newport to Cowes Road on a Saturday morning with bottles of orange squash and teas and coffees and milk and stuff and biscuits to feed the volunteers because there was no facilities over there at all. So I used to run across every Saturday morning when the volunteers were over there. But, you know, what an achievement. It's absolutely beautiful.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It is my piece. That cemetery and the two copses that used to be there growing up as a child. So I lived all my life at 109 Newport Road and then I lived eventually at 149 for 20-odd years too. So I think I've spent 47 years in Cowes Medina Ward living there. And the cemetery was just this amazing, peaceful place, and it still is.
Yeah.
It is incredible.
And you've been living in Somalia as well.
Yeah. So, oh, dear. So husband was sort of headhunted, I suppose, really. Well, he was really, yeah, he definitely was, by the United Nations to do some prison work.
All right.
And so he was able to take some certain time off from the prison service here, or whether he took holiday, I can't even remember, Maggie, but anyway, he went and done some work at the UN. And it was when at the height of the Somali pirate stuff. Yep. Was going on. Don't know how much I really should say, but so basically he was out there living to try and turn things around.
Yes.
There were other teams also working there because it was a critical time.
Yeah.
It really was, but very, very bad. And so he went out there to bring humane practices and to make improve everything.
Yep.
For people. And so I used to go out to live with him in between everything else. Thank goodness the internet was working then and I was able to do all my council work out in Somalia because unfortunately they had a fabulous weather out there, gorgeous breeze, was incredible. Food was pretty dire. I used to take all the food with me so that I could try, because he always had like a self-contained sort of unit-ish. And so, yeah, I went out there and was lived in an armed compound. I've got, you know, went off and done armed things with all these armed guards around us as we visited different places for protection. I think half the time I didn't think that those blokes knew what they were doing with them guns. But it was very, I mean, obviously I was travelling on my own. He was already out there.
Yes.
So I'd have to sleep overnight in Addis Ababa in this awful shack of a building that was the terminal and stuff. And I never forget arriving in Somalia, and I got off the plane. I mean, obviously, I'd been on about 10 planes to get to Somalia because of the UN and stuff. And I got off the plane, and I'm looking at this building, and I'm looking at all holes and everything, and I'm thinking, is it half built or half demolished? But of course, it was the big coup where they'd gone in, and the bullet holes in this building was just absolutely everywhere. So, and then the next thing, I eventually, oh dear, we had Koshin, who was a lovely man. Our interpreter, and he managed to get me through all the controls that I needed to get in, and I got in, and I just said to my husband, why are these trees such beautiful colours? What are they? And he said, what are you on about? I said, well, look, there's every colour of the rainbow in them trees. And what it is they all smoke cat on a Friday. It's their day off,
right.
And they all chew and smoke cat, which is like a drug, and it arrives in plastic bags. And they just throw the plastic bags.
Right.
So the trees are rainbow-coloured trees with plastic bags. Unbelievable.
Plastic bag trees.
And the roads are full of plastic bottles. That's what they seem to make their roads out of. It just seems to be hundreds of... If you go out for a walk, you're crackling on plastic bottles. So, yeah, it was a bit of an eye-opener. And then I went out to Africa and was out in Africa as well.
Wow, and then you came back?
Well, I was in and out the whole time. I was in and out, yeah. Can't even think now. Was in and out. In between that, I'd been hoodwinked by one of my lovely residents, Jackie, who said, Laura, there's dire things going on at the Sea Cadets. You need to get involved, turn up as the local councillor. So I turned up to the speech, didn't know what I was doing. The next minute I'm on the committee, the next minute I'm chairing the committee, the next minute I have to raise £350,000.
Oh, just like that.
Just like that, to complete the building, because it was only partially built and it wasn't legal and everything. Anyway, we achieved all of that. With Jackie at my side, who was incredible, we managed to get the £350,000, got the Sea Cadet unit built, and it's still down there, and I'm still involved with them on the periphery.
And in your spare time?
There's not much of that, Maggie. I'll tell you what, my spare time, because I've got the most beautiful, well-behaved grandchildren you could ever imagine. Absolutely adorable children. So when I haven't got them, the biggest thing for me is when I get in, I've had a lovely bath at night, I get into bed, and in this one I've got the nice Dyson fan blowing, and I can sit in and read.
Yes.
And that is my time to come down from the noise in my head.
And you love reading?
I absolutely. It's got to be. I mean, I love music, but reading is my... is definitely my thing. The Literary Festival, I've been to every one of them since they opened. They all think I'm one of the authors because I've been around so long now, which hope to be, because that's when I need to get the book out of my head.
Right.
I've got this book in my head that I've written and I've started on. I've just got to get it down, because there's been very strange things that's happened in my life and coincidences and just spooky stuff that you just couldn't... I can't explain it, but I need to write it.
Yeah.
And get it out.
Fair enough. So is that a project for the future?
I've sort of started on it, but it depends. I'm just in one of those things where I've gone into so much detail about school, because that was an important part of my life, and it's just how I... Because the people will be bored. Unless you went to those schools, you will love the book if you've been to those schools. So I've just got to work out how I take out some of the stuff, because I want it all written down.
Yeah.
Because it's important, but I don't want to get people to get bored of it.
No, that's fair enough. So what do you think is in your future?
Well, retirement, hopefully.
Okay.
62. I mean, a shame they've put the age up to 67. 65 would have been pleasant. I think, obviously, a lot of time with the grandchildren, the granddaughters. I'm with them this weekend.
How old are they now?
So I've got Blanche, who is 4, and Marcella, who is 11 months.
They're not called Prada or...
Prada, no, we were done with those names. We've chose names that are in the family, but generations back.
Yeah.
So that they have... had unique names, a bit like my daughters. When I named them 36 years ago, there wasn't an Amber Precious. And then when Saffron Bliss came along in 91, Saffron Bliss. So, but those, nobody had heard of those sort of particular names. And so I've always been a bit eccentric, I think.
And who cares?
Well, yeah, I've always knew I was a bit odd and different, but I've been lucky that, you know, I've been contented with everything, really.
Absolutely. So you've got people who are leaving school, you've got people who are leaving university, you've got people who are in a job they don't like. What would you advise them to do?
I just hope that they sort of have the confidence in themselves that they can do things. Do you know, there's so much opportunity, Maggie. Nowadays, for those children, the experiences they can have if they choose to.
Yep.
I just think that there's so many of them that just sit at home and go down this dark spiral. The best advice I can give anybody is start volunteering.
Yep.
Do something to volunteer, to get your foot in the door of doing something.
Yes.
I've turned people's lives around by starting to get them off of medication, off of benefits, off of everything, by turning them around, by giving them that chance.
Yep.
And I'm a massive believer, if I can help, I always do help people. If I can, I'll you know, they know I'll bend over backwards to help them. And it's giving them that support. Husband and I have always been very good at helping and never being selfish with what we've got. We've always tried to help people. Yep.
So you've got someone who's stuck in a job they don't like. Should they change it? Should they stick with it? Should they think, I'm going to look for something else?
I think they should be looking.
Yeah.
If they're stuck in something that they really, you know, what is the point? Life is, I mean, they say life is short. Life can be short and it can be very, very, very long. You know, my aunt's 96 and she's still going strong. Life isn't always short. It could be short. And you've just got to think about making the most of that time. This is why it's imperative that I get this book written at some stage. I just need my children to understand why they've got the mad eccentric mother that they've got because of everything that has happened in my life.
And do you have a favourite track or tune that you'd like played at the end of this?
Well, you know, this is a tricky one for me. I think I love Bob Marley and I love UB40. I love Simon and Garfunkel. I love classical music. When I have to write reports, I always put classical music on because that just calms everything right down. When I want to be, it'll be reggae. Everything is reggae in my house. I was known as the reggae queen. Everybody knew me as the reggae queen of cows because everybody was into New Romantics. Laura was into reggae. It was like, what is reggae? They didn't even know.
No.
I wouldn't entertain going to Zany's nightclub. Good God. I was always a bit eccentric. So it's very difficult for me to choose. I love Bob Marley, Redemption Song, because it's because of what he says in the lines, that it's only you that can change what's happening in your life.
Yes.
You know, if you don't give yourself redemption, then you're never going to be free.
Yeah,
I love that. UB40, 1 in 10.
Yeah,
that one talks about, and that was 40 odd years ago, 45 years ago, and everything they talk about in that is still relevant now.
Right.
Simon and Garfunkel, The Boxer. It talks about that boxer coming back and fighting.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like I am. I'm a fighter.
Right.
For the rights of people.
So which one are you going to pick?
I don't know. You choose.
No, you choose.
No. I'm a Libra. I can't choose. I
yes,
have to balance
can.
Up.
Yes,
let's do Bob Marley Redemption Song.
Okay. That'll be done. Well, thank you, Laura. It's absolutely fascinating.
Really?
Absolutely.
It's the tip of the iceberg, that is, Maggie.
Probably, yes. You find that with most people.
Yeah.
It's just the tip of the iceberg.
But thank you very much on this very hot afternoon.
Yes.
If you would like to hear this or any other of the conversations again, go to the Vectis Radio webpage, vectisradio.com, and you can find it amongst the podcasts.
Vectis Radio on DAB.